Chell Anderson is a botanist and plant ecologist, and she joins us periodically to talk about phenology or what's going on in our woods and waters right now. Welcome, Chell.
Hi.
What have you been hearing from our sandhill crane and trumpeter swan friends?
I have a real enthusiasm for these guys. I love the way they call so clearly and loudly and regularly. It's one of the best parts of, well, spring and fall in particular, because a lot of birds coming through. And sometimes in this mid-autumn kind of time frame, late summer, you know, birds aren't on their nesting territories anymore. And if they have young, they're usually flying by then and moving around. So birds might move around and hang out in places that they don't necessarily hang out right in the summer. And so I don't know what it's about, but this year we have had both trumpeter swans and sandhill cranes who have been hanging out around the wetlands of and ponds of our place for weeks.
So not just passing through.
Not just passing through. I'm sure they're on their way to somewhere, right, eventually. But no, not just passing through. Although there have been those too, you know, hear them up high, you know, even above the clouds calling. Yeah, just getting to hear them regularly. And that's just been wonderful. And it's really made me think just how grateful I am that I get to hear these birds when I think about how close we came to losing both these species from not just Minnesota, but from the continent.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So I've been thinking about what did that entail and what happened with each of these birds and how did we go from almost none to what we have now, and that I get to hear them regularly. So in the case of the sandhill cranes, they were down to like 10 to 25 nesting pairs in the state of Minnesota by the 1930s. They were already pretty rare by the 1880s. That's how much land use change and loss of habitat and hunting had diminished their presence in the state. And that was common throughout a lot of their range. And then when we had the Dust Bowl era, that was severely impacted what habitat was left. And so by then, they were protected, among many other species, by the Migratory Bird Treaty and the two laws that then Canada and the U.S. passed to really implement that treaty. So those folks who made that treaty happen, who recognized the importance, and I think it's just amazing to me that if you just read kind of the preamble to the treaty, it's recognized how important these, not just swans and cranes, but all the migratory birds that were being addressed by this treaty, people were recognizing then how important these species were to things that we think of as sort of a modern idea about the value of biodiversity, and that is control of pests, agricultural pests on crops. And so this was a primary motivator of something that happened in 1916. And we're still trying to learn that lesson. But people recognize that. And people also, I'm sure, were inspired to do this because they were inspired by birds themselves and appreciators of birds. So people took action, collective action in both countries across the continent to make this treaty happen and then to implement the treaty in each country. And as a result, in the case of the sandhill cranes, even though following that came the Dust Bowl, which further stalled their increase in their populations, once that transition back to more normal conditions happened, then they, as a bird, were species were very capable on their own without the pressure of hunting. And even though we continued to really diminish their overall habitat options across the state of Minnesota and a lot of their range, they were able to, by the 1980s, really reestablish themselves across a lot of the state and become a regular part of migratory bird passage through the state and then nesting again in Minnesota more widely. And whereas initially they had been restricted before the treaty to some very remote portions of northwestern Minnesota, the prairie aspen parkland, part of the state. Another group of nesting cranes got established kind of in the central part of the state. And between the 40s and the 80s, those two kind of groups grew together, you know, and sort of bridged that gap. And since then, they've just continued to expand out. When I first moved up here in the 1970s, there was no way you would ever see a crane or hear a sandhill crane at any time of the year. I remember talking with a fish and wildlife biologist who said, no, northeastern Minnesota, probably not, you know. But here we are, listening to them in the sky, but also seeing them on the ground, nesting in our county as well as other parts of northeastern Minnesota. So even though those who know the most about it don't think they're, and one wouldn't expect that they have the same total distribution across the state as they had in the 1880s or initially or prior to that time, they are definitely a conservation success story that didn't take a ton of effort. Once the pressure was off from hunting and there was more attention being paid to trying to protect wetland habitats as opposed to thinking they were worthless, they're a species that was able to find their way to adapt and spread out. So we all benefit from that effort that people made and from giving some attention to what they needed and letting them find their way back to a more stable population and a self-sustaining population. Trumpeter swans have had a similar history in terms of their rise and fall, in that even more severe than the sandhill cranes, there were only 69 trumpeter swans left in North America at one time, and they were out near Yellowstone, in and near Yellowstone National Park. Prior to when the Migratory Bird Treaty Act was passed into law here, we were down to just 69 of these amazing birds, our largest waterfowl. If the sandhill crane call is one that gets you right in your most primal part of your body. The trumpeter swan is the one that takes you to your highest heights. It's just, it's just the most joyful, exciting, rev you up kind of call. I just can't imagine that I might not have ever got to hear that. What a loss, you know, even though I never would have known it. I'm so grateful that they too were protected by the treaty from mostly hunting pressure in their case, over hunting and unregulated hunting, but also there would have been habitat loss in some parts of the state for sure. With that few birds, they had been extirpated from Minnesota. They weren't here anymore. They were only out in Montana. So in the 1960s, a person who's just recently retired from DNR, Carol Henderson, first leader of Minnesota's non-game wildlife program. That's the program that you can contribute to on the chickadee checkoff. Yep. He proposed to try to reintroduce trumpeter swans to Minnesota. Boy, he didn't get a really positive response initially. People thought, it's not worth it. It's not going to. How could we possibly do that? You know, he prevailed in, you know, getting it going and tremendous amount of work. So starting then and then up until 2012, the reintroduction work was continuing on. And early on, I think it was in the 80s, they were doing a lot of collecting of eggs from Alaska and they would bring them back to Minnesota, rear them, hatch them and rear them at Carlos Avery. And then they would release them as two-year-olds. Lo and behold,
we have trumpeters.
We have trumpeter swans. Now we have the largest population in the lower 48 states.
Because of one man.
Because of one man and our collective willingness to contribute to the restoration of this and work that goes to support all kinds of non-game species. But the funding for all that swan reintroduction came from the non-game wildlife program and the money that's generated from that tax form checkoff and contribution that people make. So individual and others, I mean, he had a lot of help. He wasn't doing this by himself. He was a visionary person. He was supported by people who were willing to help, agencies that were willing to then get involved, and all of us who wanted to see and hear and appreciate and benefit from the species still being a part of our world here.
Chael Anderson regularly fills us in on current events in the woods. Thanks for inspiring us with the success story of the sandhill cranes and trumpeter swans.
You're welcome.